From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, Genes, Giants, Monsters, and Men with Joseph Farrell. Get ready for that, but here's what's happening. Officials launching an investigation into the mystery behind the death in the second die-off of thousands of fish near Los Angeles in more than 1 month now. Thousands of anchovies and sardines were found dead in Ventura Harbor near Los Angeles, alarming officials about any possible environmental hazard that might lead to the die-off. But a preliminary investigation finds that the fish died due to the lack of oxygen in the water after moving into the harbor a week ago. Jim Berklin, our geologist. Jim, I don't know about you, but is this a sign of a possible earthquake?
Well, I used to kind of think so. Now the worldwide accumulation of these fish kills are found all around, and they think a large part of it is the red tide, these little one-celled dinoflagellates that bloom due to an unusual mixture of deep currents coming up to the surface. And I'm finding it off Vancouver Island and Japan and Mexico and Redondo Beach here and all these places. Some of it may be from sewage increasing the nitrogen levels, but I was leaning towards the, a big, large quake imminent, but there seems to be other explanations for these massive fish kills at this point.
Now, but you still think, though, Southern California could get hit with a big quake, especially also up in the north, right?
Yes. We're having a very strong Peridian spring tide right now because of the latest full moon and 20 hours later, the closest approach to the moon. We've already had, on the anniversary of the April 18th, 1906 quake, we had a 3.8 down to possibly as low as 3.4, widely felt by San Francisco while I was being interviewed by a Time Life photographer. And so it was very timely on the second day of this window. Then in Los Angeles, there was a 2.9, which is below my minimum prediction, but that was today. And I see there was a big whale that beached up in shore of state of Washington at a beach, and that was not due to red tide. So that's another place I'm looking at a quake developing.
Well, these could be all ominous signs, Jim Berklin. Know that. Jim's website, part of our Twitter feed at coasttocoastam.com. The scale of Japan's March 11th earthquake and tsunami was not the only thing that surprised geologists. The 9.0 earthquake in Japan, which, by the way, is the fourth most powerful quake ever recorded, also caused an unusually severe and widespread shift in soil, according to a new study. Near coastlines, harbors, rivers, earthquakes can make the wet, sandy soil jiggle, turning it temporarily from a solid to a liquid state, a process known as liquefaction. Heavy sand and rock sinks while the water and lighter sand bubbles to the surface. The slurry spreads often toward the water and the surface shifts. Japan's liquefaction occurred over hundreds of miles, surprising even experienced engineers who are accustomed to seeing disaster sites, including the recent earthquakes in Chile and New Zealand. Here's something you don't see every day. Hundreds of new islands have been discovered around the world. The Earth has 657 more barrier islands than previously thought, according to new global surveys done by researchers from Duke University and Meredith College in North Carolina. The researchers identified a total of 2,100 barrier islands worldwide using satellite images, topical maps, and navigation charts. Wildfires across Texas have now burned more than 1 million acres of land throughout the state. 11 new fires beginning on Wednesday. Dry conditions over the past several months, high winds, temperatures in the 90s are fueling the blazes. Maybe we should think about some rain down there in Texas and push it that way. The amount of acreage that's been destroyed so far, roughly the size of Rhode Island. Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano will unveil a new system aimed at highlighting specific imminent threats to replace the 5 color-coded terror alert systems. These systems will have 2 levels of warnings, elevated and imminent, that will be relayed to the public only under certain circumstances for limited periods of time, sometimes using Facebook and Twitter. Here's Doug Hagman. He monitors all these security issues for us. Doug, one, I'm glad we're doing away with the color-coded system. I never liked it in the first place, but is this one going to work at all?
Yeah, I'm glad as well. But when you look at this, while the color-coded system was obviously flawed, we are now moved to a two-tiered system that's even worse, especially considering this from a 1984 Orwellian-type perspective. Just by its very simplicity, the two-tiered system has no off switch. It has elevated and imminent, suggesting then that we will always be at an elevated alert level, which is very much like the novel 1984, in which the populace was engaged in a never-ending war against a constantly changing enemy. And that, of course, resulted in greater government controls and power. And this is what I believe is implicit in this change, because of the fact that we have no off switch.
Something, Doug, we do not want to see. Airlines will soon be required to refund bag fees if they lose luggage, and they'll pay travelers more for bumping them from a flight. And the federal government has announced new passenger protections that also expand a tarmac delay rule to prevent passengers from being stranded on international flights for longer than 4 hours. Can you imagine sitting there on the tarmac for that long? They're going to start having to pay large fines to people. We'll see. A jury has convicted the majority owner of what has now been called the nation's largest mortgage company fraud scheme on all 14 counts in a $2.9 billion fraud trial that officials have said is one of the most significant prosecutions to arise from the nation's financial crisis. They should go after more people. Prosecutors said that Lee Farkas led a fraud scheme of staggering proportions for roughly 8 years as chairman of the Florida-based Taylor Bean & Whitaker Company, 2,000 employees out of work out of that company because of the massive fraud. A breath test that can sniff out cancer is a step closer to reality, according to preliminary study. Researchers found that an electronic nose was able to identify chemical signals of cancer in the breath of patients with lung or head and neck cancer. A cancer charity said that it would take years of research to see if the breath test could be used in the clinic.
Sunday, Monday, happy days. Tuesday, Wednesday, happy days. Thursday, Friday, happy days. The weekend comes, my cycle hums, ready to race to you.
Well, actors from the cast of Happy Days are suing CBS Studios for more than $10 million in damages, claiming that they have been denied profits from merchandise. They say CBS released DVDs and allowed their images to be used on products, including lunchboxes and gambling machines, without sharing revenue. Anson Williams, who played Potsy, and Don Most, Ralph Melf, in the sitcom, are among cast members who have brought the case in Los Angeles. Well, we're going to be talking about abiotic oil in a moment. The planet does make it, as we've talked about with Jerome Corsi. But there's also a major story breaking today across the world, and it includes Jerry Corsi. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Dr. Jerome Corsi received his PhD from Harvard University in political science. He's written a number of books. He's a main guest here on Coast to Coast. We are going to be talking about his work, Black Gold Stranglehold, in a moment, because there's a major study that's been released about new hydrocarbons and how that they are formed from methane deep within the earth, which is our abiotic oil theory, which was by Professor Thomas Gold many, many years ago. But there's a major story breaking worldwide today, and it has to do with Jerry Corsi. So we're going to talk with him for a few minutes about that before we get into this abiotic oil story as well. A lot of it has to do with the eligibility of President Barack Obama. As you know, Donald Trump, who hasn't announced yet that he wants to seek the presidency, is churning up the 2012 presidential race with his many questions about President Barack Obama's eligibility. Now, for years, Jerry Corsi has been monitoring this story. He's with us now on Coast to Coast. Jerry, you have created quite a stir today, my friend.
Well, it's been quite a day, George. It started with the Drudge Report having the cover of my book, Where's the Birth Certificate, right at the top of the Drudge homepage with a story about the book. The book is going to be out in May. It's out yet. It just, in fact, went to the printer this week. So it's remarkable to have this much publicity about a book that's not even available yet to read. And Drudge, who, you know, has basically been given some access to the book and knows what's in the book, came out with this story and it hit number one on Amazon tonight as a result, which is again remarkable for a book to hit number one on the charts a month before it's published.
Yeah, that is truly amazing. Right, let's take just about 10 minutes here, Jerry. I want to talk about this abiotic story, and we'll talk more about this when the book comes out, but because we have you and it is such a national story now, and I want a lot of our listeners to understand, you wrote the book about John Kerry on Swift Boats, and you have also been on this program before. You were not a staunch supporter of President George Bush after his 8 years in office. You call it the way you see it, and a lot of people will think that you are very partisan. You are not. Am I correct there?
Well, that's right. I mean, George, you know, and I've been on your show when I wrote The Late Great USA, which was on the Security and Prosperity Partnership in North America, what I called the coming merger between Canada, the United States, and Mexico. And that was during the George Bush administration, was very critical of George W. Bush. And I was excoriated at that time by Republicans and George W. Bush supporters for attacking the Bush administration on the North American Union. So, again, I've been attacked by both sides. It's always curious to me that, you know, certainly I'm going to get excoriated again when I wrote The Abomination in 2008, which was a number one New York Times bestseller, again, going into the background of President Obama. You know, I'm an investigative researcher, so I guess, George, I expect to get the criticism because, you know, my goal is not to get invited to the White House for Thanksgiving dinner. My goal is to do the investigative work that the American public wants to see, to tell the truth and let the chips fall where they may.
Now, this story, this book, it includes 3 years of a continuing research, private investigators, people looking for information about whether President Obama, Barack Obama, was born in the United States or elsewhere. What have you come up? What can you tell us at this point,
George? Well, George, the book is under wraps until it comes out. I'm really constrained. We're in the quiet period for the book, so I can't go into the content of the book. I'm under really legal agreements not to go into any interviews about the content of the book until we get to the May 17th publishing date. But what I will tell you is I've been people can look at things I have written. The Abomination is a good starting point for my evaluation of Barack Obama as a leftist politician. And also, I'm a senior staff reporter on WorldNet Daily, WND, my own homepage, JeromeCorsi.com, which is also 1776nation.com, archives a lot of my articles and writings. So if you look over the past 3 years, I have been writing about the eligibility issue of Barack Obama. I can tell you that in the book coming out, the Where's the Birth Certificate, people are going to see new information that has never been released. Drudge said today, and I think it's accurate, that it's likely President Obama may learn things about his birth and his nativity story and his upbringing that even President Obama doesn't know.
Well, look, Jerry, I was born in Detroit, Michigan. I know that for two reasons. One, my parents told me.
Right.
Okay, so I believe them. Two, I do have a certified copy of my birth certificate.
Precisely.
That says I was born in Mount Carmel Hospital in Detroit, Michigan. Those are the only ways I know I was born in Detroit. Those
That's
two
right.
things. Now, is it possible that Barack Obama might have been born in Kenya, but his parents just never told him that they said, you were born in Hawaii? I'm sorry.
That's certainly a possibility. And I explore that. I've been exploring that. Remember, I went to Kenya. I was in 2008. I was actually deported out of Kenya because the government didn't want me to. Remember that. And I was on your show right afterwards. Because the government of Kenya did not want me giving a press conference in Kenya, in Nairobi, releasing the information I found out then about President Obama and about President Obama's relationship to Raila Odinga, who's now the Prime Minister of Kenya. So, you know, I've traveled to Hawaii. I've hired private investigators. This has been a detailed search. When I was in Kenya, I was there for almost 2 weeks. And had meetings with top government officials in Indonesia, in Kenya, in Hawaii. I've had top inside sources. I've been a professional investigative reporter for a long time, and it is when I did the work on the late great USA. I had a FOIA, Freedom of Information Act request, if you recall, and I had 1,000 pages of internal documents from the Security and Prosperity Partnership. Somebody, I must have had a friend within the government at that time, somebody even slipped into those documents the organizational chart of the Security and Prosperity Partnership, if you remember, George, that I published in the book with all of the... So, you know, this is the kind of work I do is really just digging and digging, finding sources, continuing to go for the truth, doing hundreds of interviews. It's hours and hours and hours worth of work, and I've been publishing for 3 years my findings, and now I had enough to put into this book, which was new and I think startling, and I think brings together some revelations, as Drudge said today, about who the identity of the president really is. So while I'm constrained to not go into detail about what the book says, I think Drudge accurately portrayed the book in terms of it's going to be startling. It's going to be a major issue. This eligibility issue is not going away.
Well, and Donald Trump is bringing it to the forefront. Even, you know, it cost Lou Dobbs his job, I think, at CNN. You've been hammering away at it as much as you can. But it seemed to have faded away until Donald Trump started to bring it to the forefront.
There's no question that Donald Trump bringing the issue of the eligibility forward, sitting in The View and being pounded in that interview. And by the way, we've got a couple of television commercials we've just produced. I'm linking them up on my Facebook page, and we will be linking them up on WND and on JeromeCorsi.com. And one of them has the Donald Trump segment from The View. Clearly, Donald Trump brought this issue again to the forefront. It came up also a few weeks ago when Governor Abercrombie took office in Hawaii and said he was going to settle the whole issue and find and release to the public President Obama's birth records, and Abercrombie found nothing and released nothing. So again, I think here you've got a story Donald Trump understands is one that's a legitimate question to raise. The Article 2, Section 1 of the Constitution demands that a president be a natural-born citizen. And so for millions of Americans who care about the Constitution, it is not acceptable to ridicule these people, myself included, because we dare to ask the question if President Obama is a natural-born citizen under the meaning of Article 2, Section 1 of the Constitution.
What would happen, Jerry, if he came out and said, look, I don't know where I was born. My parents told me I was born in Hawaii. I really don't have the birth certificate, because if he did, he probably should have shown all of us by now. What would happen if he simply said that? I don't know where I was born.
Well, I think it would be refreshing to have some truth out of the White House on the eligibility issue instead of stonewalling and ridiculing people who dare to ask the question. We'd have a constitutional crisis, there's no doubt. Now, John McCain, as you recall, prior to the 2008 election, came to Congress and presented his birth credentials because John McCain was born in the Panama Canal Zone. His father was on a Navy base in the Panama Canal Zone.
That was on a base, though. That's right, which is almost like grandfathered in, isn't it?
Right. Well, and in fact, there was a resolution. Congress looked at John McCain's his birth credentials, and there was a resolution that was passed in the House and Senate. In fact, Barack Obama co-sponsored the resolution as a senator, and the Congress ruled, I think appropriately, that John McCain was a natural-born citizen because the founders never meant to exclude someone as natural-born who was born outside the country, but while their parents were serving in the U.S. military defending the nation. And so I think that was an acceptable, you know, distinction. Barack Obama refused to submit his own consideration, his own birth credentials to Congress for a similar evaluation.
Lowell, let me ask you some quick stories, it's quick questions here, then we'll get into the abiotic theory right after the break, though I may ask you a couple more on this. First of all, Barry Sotero, was that his name? And if it was, why did he change it?
Well, that's, again, a very interesting question, and I've been writing about that for the last 2 years. In Indonesia, Barack Obama was Barry Sotero. His stepfather, his Indonesian stepfather, was Sotero was his last name. And in fact, one of the questions I've been raising and exploring for the last 2 years is, was Barack Obama adopted by his Indonesian stepfather? See, to be a natural-born citizen is not something a person chooses. You don't choose who your parents are. You don't choose where or how you're born. And you don't choose some of the circumstances of your early life. So a person who is adopted could lose their natural-born status if the adoption made them a citizen of a foreign country.
All right, Jerry, hold on. Just a few more questions about this, and then we'll get into the abiotic oil theory. Plus, we'll take some phone calls with Jerry Corsi right here on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, Joseph Farrell joins us as we talk about genes, giants, monsters, and men. It's an incredible story by an incredible researcher, so stand by for that. When I come right back on Coast to Coast AM, a couple more quick questions for Jerome Corsi. His new book is coming out in about a month, a little less than that. Where's the birth certificate? The case that Barack Obama is not eligible to be president. And then we'll get into this incredible story of abiotic oil. And then we'll take your calls on Coast to Coast AM. And Jerry, I know you're restricted from what you can say because the book's not out yet. A couple more quick questions and we'll go to the study on abiotic oil. Is it true that President Obama has spent, or his campaign, I don't know who, upwards to $1 million or more just to try to keep information from reaching the public about this birth certificate?
Yes, George, it is. WorldNet Daily, WND.com, we documented, and this was about a year or so ago, started tracking the expenditures from the White House to a firm called Perkins & Coie, which is out in Seattle, and one of the top attorneys in that firm had been representing President Obama in the various eligibility lawsuits that have been launched, and we tracked very close to $1 million. Then that lawyer was brought inside the White House, put on the White House staff, and allowed to continue as a White House lawyer to represent President Obama in these cases, which, of course, incurs additional expense. So I'm confident that the number of $1 million and probably $2 million expenditure by the White House to prevent these eligibility cases from succeeding, from preventing basically his long-form hospital-generated birth certificate from being seen by the American public, I'm confident that's a reasonable expenditure.
What was the certification of birth that we saw on the Internet during the campaign? What was that?
That's a short form. And this, again, we've been arguing for last almost 3 years. It's a short form birth certificate. It's called a certification of birth. It does not have any of the information. It's not hospital generated. It doesn't come from a physician who signs it that attended the birth. And in states like Hawaii, the family can go in and simply testify that a child was born in Hawaii. And under Hawaiian law, when Barack Obama was born and now, that testimony without independent investigation can be accepted as proof of an Hawaiian birth.
So if my parents flew to Hawaii and simply testified to the fact that I was born in Hawaii, they would give us a certification that would probably say that George Norrie was born there, right?
Right. Your parents would probably have to have had some documentation. They lived in Hawaii.
All right.
Phone bills, paying rent, whatever. Because Hawaii has wanted, since it became a state, to have as many people in Hawaii be Hawaiian citizens as possible. So Hawaii has made it easy to register babies as Hawaiian births. If the family can say, we're Hawaiian, maybe the baby was born in another state or overseas, Hawaii still bends over backwards to allow that baby to be a Hawaiian birth. So these short-form birth certificates are very suspect as to what they prove. And, you know, this has been a long debate going on, which I really advance in the book. There's a lot about this in the book. And, George, I really got to say, you know, this is probably the last interview I'm going to do until on any subject. And I do 8 to 10 radio interviews a day when I'm working at WND and writing articles because we're in the quiet period on the book. And I agreed to be with you tonight because of my great respect for you and for the show. And I wanted to be able, on the day the Drudge brought the book forward to the book, also to come on Coast to Coast and be able to let your audience know that the book was available. And that's over the years, George, including being in the studio with you, I've developed great respect for you and for the show, and it's an honor always to be with you.
Well, thank
you. After this interview, I'll be in a total quiet period, and even tonight I'm not going into the content of the book, simply about my past work and what I've done to explore the eligibility issue.
Well, let me ask you, and this is the reason you're on the program in the first place before this story broke today, a new study demonstrating that high hydrocarbons could be formed from methane deep within the earth which is the abiotic oil theory, which
correct.
Is that this planet has an abundance of oil deep down, and it's not from dead dinosaurs. It's not from plants. This is an amazing story, Jerry.
It is an amazing story. And again, since I wrote Black Gold Stranglehold, which I co-authored with Craig Smith of Swiss America, that goes back to, we wrote that book in 2005. 2005 it was published. I've been arguing that oil is abiotic, meaning produced from non-biological processes, natural processes that continue to occur within the Earth on an ongoing basis. The oil is formed in the mantle of the Earth, deeper than sedimentary rock, that it pools through cracks in the bedrock, the basement rock, to pool the sedimentary rocks. And our geologists have mistakenly assumed that the sedimentary rock produced the oil, which is a theory that, you know, going back to the end of World War II, the Soviet Union rejected. Our geologists told Russia they had no oil. And now even, I'm sure, if Stalin would be rolling over his grave at how much oil he left in Central Asia, to say nothing about Russia itself. Russia is one of the number one or number two producers of oil today in the world, going after deep earth oil. And if you take a look at the Gulf, going down to this Deepwater Horizon well that blew, that well was like 5 miles down. And look at the tremendous pressures of oil and natural gas that were coming up from that well, George. That has to be a huge reservoir of oil deep within the earth that, you know, obviously did not get produced by the kind of biological debris. It's not dead dinosaurs. It's not ancient forests. It's not plankton or any other biological debris. This is abiotic oil that the scientists have understood, and the formulas, the Fischer-Tropsch equations have really identified the chemical processes that can produce oil, and now scientists in the laboratory and in the field are beginning to realize that deep earth oil is abundant and produced in processes that are natural and ongoing and have nothing to do with biological decay.
You know, I'm convinced, Jerry, that if the world knew about this,
right.
truly understood the abiotic oil theory, the price of oil would plummet, wouldn't
it? Of course it would. And the Saudis are right when they're saying today that oil is abundant. Its supply is tremendous. And, George, I say some things, common sense things. You know, we don't have oil in the Middle East because at the end of the Mesozoic era, all the dinosaurs herded to Saudi Arabia and died in a big heap. Well, that's not why there's oil in Saudi Arabia and not in other places. The bedrock under Saudi Arabia is deeply fractured above, you know, below the oil fields. I went and got one of the basement tectonic studies that was done in the early 1990s, mapping the bedrock fractures under the Saudi oil fields. Scientists like Thomas Gold, who wrote the Deep Hot Biosphere, mm-hmm. which I've thought has always been a brilliant and pathfinding book, where Thomas Gold was basically an astrophysicist. And he helped to develop radar in World War II. And Gold was getting these spectrographic analyses from our solar system, and he was finding hydrocarbons all over our solar system. And he was saying, wait, there's no little dinosaurs or there's no living material on these planets or moons and others that would produce the hydrocarbons. The spectrographic analysis was showing him was there. So he produced and analyzed that deep within the Earth there are the forces and the heat, the natural processes that will cause the hydrogen and carbon to bind together in the presence of various catalysts, ferrous oxide, there's a number of catalysts. The Fischer-Tropsch equations were developed by the German chemists in the Weimar Republic, and they were used by the Nazis to make oil out of coal, synthetic oil, because Germany itself does not have abundant oil, but it had available coal.
Some regions of the planet, like the Middle East, still have more oil than other regions. Assuming the abiotic oil theory is absolutely fact, I would guess that there might be certain pockets on this planet that just have more of this oil.
That would make sense, George, and certain of the conditions that are necessary to produce oil in the deep earth environment are not going to be constant or even all across the globe. But, you know, for everybody to get their minds around what we're talking about, something like, 80% of the world is underwater? Now, the continents are a small percentage of the land that's above water.
That's right.
And we've only looked for oil a few miles out from the coastal perimeters. We're finding abundant oil. Look at what Brazil is finding, huge quantities of oil. Look at what we found in the Gulf. And the Gulf, I think, was deeply fractured by a comet that did hit at the end of the Mesozoic era. The Alvarezes, I think, did the pioneering work there with Iridium to demonstrate, you know, that there have been some comets that have hit the Earth that have caused deep fractures. And there is a branch right now of oil exploration, which is looking for fractures within the Earth to see if they would lead to oil pooling from deep within the Earth. It's not going to be constant. You're not going to find it anywhere you drill deeply, but I think it's going to be abundant so that oil and natural gas is much more available at deep Earth levels than we've ever imagined. As the technology permits us to go out further and further into the ocean, I think we're going to be able to find the availability of oil and natural gas at the deepest levels of the ocean all around the world.
All right, let's look at Black Gold Stranglehold, your book about the abiotic oil theory. I can't believe that major oil executives don't sit down in a meeting and say to their executives, you know, this planet has as much oil as we ever need. Do you think they ever talk about that, Jerry?
Well, I've been with some oil executives that do talk about it, and the oil executives like, you know, to dismiss the peak oil theories that we're running out of oil. They don't really want to talk about them because I think in general, those professionals who work in oil know that oil is abundant, like Saudi Arabia is saying today, and they really don't care anymore about the theory of oil because the technology makes getting deep water and deep earth oil economically possible. So the big oil companies are just exploring deep earth and deep water oil without admitting that it's changed their fundamental theory, that this is not biological oil. I mean, the idea that physical bodies or plants or other biological debris is going to deteriorate into oil basically violates the second law of thermodynamics, which is, you know, if you've got the air in a balloon and you release the balloon's neck, the air flows out. It doesn't go back into the balloon. Well, we deteriorate. You know, I buried, unfortunately, a lot of people in my family. I never said, you know, Aunt Martha, you better line that casket and put a spigot on it because she's going to turn into diesel number two.
That's right.
You know, people don't deteriorate. The Bible does not say dust into oil. It says dust into dust. We bury people because they deteriorate into constituent chemicals and smell. That's deterioration. It's the natural biological process. When I was a kid, I had a cat, and I buried the cat. Well, a couple years later, I dug it up. There wasn't any oil. A few bones, a little bit of fur. You know, if I had a pile of cats and I buried them very deep and dug them up, there still wouldn't be any oil from those cats.
Well, you know, it's like the diamond business too, Jerry. You know, if De Beers ever released all the diamonds on the market
right
that are really out there, the prices would plummet.
And George, the idea of fossil fuel is a brilliant marketing idea because if you can convince people that oil is fossil fuel, well, there were only so many fossils, so there could only be so much oil. To say to people, but wait a minute, oil is a natural process of the earth. It's like water. The earth generates it, regenerates it. It's on a constant basis. People would suddenly say, well, why are we paying so much? Why are we going to pay, you know, $6 a gallon, which I think we're headed to $5 a gallon and gasoline very, very quickly. And I think it's largely because of the politics of oil, largely because of the unwillingness of the current administration, the Obama administration, to drill, and the influence of the environmentalists, although I don't even give the Bush administration very high grades on their willingness to drill. I mean, we have abundant oil in Alaska, off our coasts. We've got huge quantities of natural gas. So the Department of Energy's Deep Trek, TREK, is part of their website, and their fossil fuel section, and you'll find documentation that we have huge pools of natural gas at deep Earth levels within the continental United States. And the natural gas is an alternative in many, many instances, and especially liquefied natural gas, to burning oil-based products. It'd be cleaner, more efficient, and we have natural gas abundantly in the United States.
Well, you know, this is an amazing story all by itself, Jerry, and I would hope one day that the world begins to wake up and understand what this planet is doing. It has an abundance of it. I still think we need to get cleaner sources to use, but it's there. Now, here's my question. I always believe that everything has a purpose. So with all this methane or oil down deep within the planet, if we take it out and continue to take it out, what are we doing structurally to the planet? Anything?
Well, it's possible there could be some structural impact, but yet we don't understand it entirely. There's a whole new branch of science. In fact, there's a new book coming out called Research in Geofluids. People don't realize how many geofluids there are, including, you know, water at deep levels, water at not very, very deep groundwater flows, a hydrocarbon that are in faulted sedimentary bases, hydrothermal ores. Look at hydrothermal gases that people use for natural thermal heat. The Earth is not, you know, below the surface of the Earth, it's not just all solid rock. A lot of things going on under there. Magma flows from volcanoes. And I think that our scientists, our geoscientists, are just beginning to understand that the Earth is a living dynamic force that produces fluids, including oil, and probably has the ability to produce an enormous quantity of it. And if we begin to tap some of it and utilize some of it, I studied a lot of Julian Simon, I think, who was a brilliant resource economist. And Julian Simon made the point that in the Industrial Revolution, the 1850s in Great Britain, they were writing books about running out of coal. They were really worried they were going to run out of coal, and they couldn't keep the Industrial Revolution going. And Julian Simon said, look, you know, there was much more coal than they thought there was. As the technology improved, they were able to get more of the coal economically and use it efficiently at a reasonable price. Alternatives to coal developed, like oil, and still today there's more coal than we know what to do with. We didn't run out. It'll be the same with oil. It'll be the same with natural gas once we get our minds past the silly idea that the dinosaurs died in the heap and that's why we have oil. It's just not the case.
Well, Jerry, it's who knows what's going to happen in the future when it comes down to all of this, but it is a remarkable story, a new study demonstrating how high hydrocarbons could be formed from methane deep within the Earth, which is, folks, the abiotic oil theory. We've been talking about it for years on this program. Jerry has written a book about it called The Abiotic Oil Theory as well, called Black Gold Stranglehold.
And, George, I commend you for bringing this story, and you've done it for years. It's been a great honor to be with you doing it. I'll also point out it's all through, you know, Titan, the great moon of Saturn, is filled with methanes, including liquid methanes. NASA and the European Space Agency have identified that that's abiotic methane. Of course, their alternative would say there are little dinosaurs or something up there on Titan that produce the methane. Hydrocarbons are abundant on the Earth and in our solar system, and the idea that we're going to run out or that they're scarce is just a hoax that has been perpetrated on people thinking fossil fuels, which I think is just a great political and marketing idea.
I think so, too. Jerry, I want to thank you. Good luck to you when this other book comes out. Where's the birth certificate? You are going to be right in the middle of a firestorm when this happens. You know that.
Well, I've been there before, George, and, I'm an investigative reporter, and I don't do this simply to get applause and invited to the White House for Christmas dinner. So I'm going to take the hits where they may. Every time I walk through Arlington Cemetery, I'm reminded of a lot of men and women who didn't worry about the price they had to pay for American freedom.
You're going to stand by the book when it comes out?
Absolutely, George, and I'll be happy to come back anytime you ask. And this is the last. From here, I'm not going to give any more press or radio or television interviews until the book is out.
Well, I understand. We're one of the few to find you today, so that's good.
Yes, it was hard, and I made it hard. I'm going underground now, George.
All right, Jerry. Go underground and look for some oil, the abiotic oil theory as well. Sorry we didn't get to some of your calls. I went a little long with Jerry Corsi on the issue of the birth certificate. I'll be back in a moment with Joseph Farrell as we talk about genes, giants, monsters, and men on Coast to Coast AM.